Meeting Tuesday, March 10th, 2015, here at the Vets Hall at 6 p.m. Not to startle you, but I am Councilmember Noah Smuckler, your mayor pro tem, acting on behalf of Mayor Jamie Irons, who's actually working on our behalf in Washington, D.C. right now, along with City Manager Dave Buckingham. They're out there lobbying for the at the CMAQ conference for harbor dredging, as we annually do. So I'll be here holding down the fort, and let the record show that we have all other council members besides Mayor Irons here and present. So we will begin the meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. And if you would mind rising, we'll have Sergeant Dave Berganzel lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we did not have a closed session tonight, and so we'll move right into mayor and council member announcements. If Christine, would you like to start us off?
Yep. Good evening, everyone. I do not have an announcement this evening.
All right.
Thank you.
My turn?
Yes.
All right. I do have one announcement, and this is for the families in Del Mar Elementary, fifth grade. This is this is not a school-sponsored event, but this is an outdoor camp opportunity coming at Camp Ocean Pines, April 24th through the 26th. Just another, I know that the parents are working at Del Mar to get this information out to the parents, but I'm also doing it, saying that this is a great opportunity to go up to Camp Ocean Pines. So please, if you need further information, contact Kara Taylor or Amy Burton or Jen Ford. Thank you. That's all.
Councilmember Hedy? All right. If you don't mind, as part of our next round of presentations, I'd like to pull A8. We have a special proclamation recognizing Sergeant Dave Bergansel, and I'd like to meet him at the podium along with all the council members, if you don't mind. So they talk about not doing math in public. Well, here's some reading in public. It's usually a little easier, particularly when it's printed out nice and big. Thank you. And Dave, thanks for being here, and we'll lead into this proclamation, which you heartily deserve. So this is a proclamation of the City of Morro Bay commending and honoring Police Sergeant Dave Bergansel on your retirement. And whereas Police Sergeant Dave Bergansel began his public safety career with the City of Morro Bay as a Level 1 Resource Police Officer on January 4th, 1984, and became a full-time police officer on February 24th of that same year. Whereas Sergeant Bergansel progressed in his career with the City of Morro Bay and served as School Resource Officer in 1989, was appointed to Police Corporal on January 28th, 1995, served as detective supervisor, and ultimately promoted to police sergeant on May 5th, 2007. And whereas Sergeant Bergansel has helped raise thousands of dollars as a department representative to the Law Enforcement Torch Run for Special Olympics and the Bowl-a-thon on behalf of Transitions Mental Health, and whereas Sergeant Bergansel has received multiple awards from California's Mothers Against Drunk Driving for his excellent service in removing intoxicated drivers from the roadways, and has served as a department representative to the San Luis Obispo County DUI Task Force, and whereas Sergeant Bergansel has served as a department range master, armorer, firearms instructor, driver awareness instructor, and traffic radar instructor, and whereas Sergeant Bergansel has served as a field training officer, field training coordinator, and training manager to promote, oversee, and advance department training of new and existing officers, and whereas Sergeant Bergansel was instrumental in the formation of the department's DARE program outreach to drug and alcohol resistance education for youth, and whereas Sergeant Bergansel has always worked in a community-oriented policing mode and has promoted the style of policing to both adults and children in the community through his participation in a number of events and activities, And whereas Sergeant Bergansel has participated in numerous community service activities, including caroling cops, Thanksgiving dinner, Special Olympics tip-a-cop dinners, and Neighborhood Watch. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay honors and recognizes Sergeant Bergansel for his service and leadership in Morro Bay over the last 31 years. Be it further resolved that the Morro Bay City Council extends its appreciation for Mr. Bergansel's many years of professional service to the City of Morro Bay and offers its best wishes for many warm sunsets. Thank you, Mr. Bergansel. Great work. Yeah. If you'd like to say a few words, I know your family's here in the audience tonight. This is proclamation is for you, and feel free to address everyone. And 30 years in one organization, I think it's remarkable, and I know we're going to have a lot of your shoes to fill as a calm and steady leader in our department. Is really it's been a pleasure to observe you from a distance. And for the record, we never had an interaction, which I consider a good thing.
Well, I really don't know what to say. It's an honor to be here, and I appreciate being recognized. And we don't go into this business typically to get recognized, but it is a cool thing when we do. I have an amazing family that supported me, all these years, and the family serve with those that do serve, and along the years I've missed a lot of birthdays and dance competitions and softball games and anniversaries and all that. So I do appreciate my my wife Kathleen and my daughter Christiana and my other daughter Rachel, as well as my other two children who are not here. And I have been honored to work with some amazing people. I had some amazing trainers and amazing mentors, amazing supervisors, and amazing leaders that have brought me up through the last 30 years. And you never go a day without learning something. And so that's an amazing thing to be in a career and to have a career that I've had. I've been honored to be here and honored to serve the citizens of Morro Bay as long as I have. Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that, and we will go right in now to public presentations. And why don't we start with Mr. Haugen and our Tourism Bureau quarterly presentation? Thanks, Brett.
I just wanted to say happy retirement. Great job. That's a hard act to follow. 31 years. I've only been here a year, so I've got a little ways to go. Council members, city staff, thank you so much for allowing me to come and present tonight. I'm going to be going over a few items with you and the rest of the audience. But first, I did want to make sure that to invite people to our annual stakeholders meeting, which is this Thursday. We will be having a breakfast from 9 to 9:30, and then the stakeholder meeting will start at 9:30. A lot of great things that we're going to be covering. We'll be doing a year in review and also looking ahead at what's coming up for the 2015-2016 year. A lot of exciting stuff. So people are definitely welcome. If you're interested in RSVPing, you can contact our office at 225-1570, or you can email us at marketing@morrobay.org. But moving along here, I'll be actually reporting on July 1st, 2014 through the end of January of 2015. Starting out is just some statistics here. The number of leads that the Bureau has actually sent out to its stakeholders, 18, advertising and promotional opportunities. That goes to both the lodging as well as the business community here in Morro Bay. The number of visitors that have entered into the center physically has been 9,300. Listening sessions, 32. And then we have a reservation widget. And for those individuals out there who don't know, Jackrabbit is our reservation system that we use to do the hotel and motel booking. And we were actually able to get that on 4 partnering sites outside of the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau site. Moving forward here, this gives you a little bit of a breakdown of the number of visitors. Again, 9,300. The number of phone calls coming in is a little bit under 900, and email inquiries at 67. As you can see, council, staff, and also audience, we do see a lot more individuals inquiring about different activities specific to recreation, and we actually broke that down based off of what the council wanted to see us do with the different categories. Activities, that's something where it's at a cost. And so if somebody is looking at doing a boat tour or renting a kayak or stand-up paddleboard, activities, again, has that the cost factor. The recreation are the things that are free that people can do. So perhaps, you know, visiting the rock, going into the state park, you know, wondering a little bit about the bike trails here. And the list, you can actually see kind of going down the list. Dining off obviously is a definite high one too, where people are looking for great places to dine. Usually they're looking for the best place for fish and chips. So looking at the budget, moving forward here, the Morro Bay Visitor Center, you can see the contribution from the city of Morro Bay at $100,000. Event funding also from the city of Morro Bay at $40,000. And grant dollars were actually returned to the Bureau. They were unused dollars from the 50th at $2,500. So you can see that the revenue, total revenue for this year is $142,500. Expenses, the Visitor Center administration comes in at around $105,600. And then event funding is $42,500. And we do plan on distributing all of those funds this year. Moving on to, I guess my one slide is missing from here. But anyway, moving on, what I'm actually showing you here is how we're actually tracking according with expenses. Right now for Visitor Center, we're at about 57.8%, and that's of the budget that has been spent at the end of January. And then the event funding, it's on a smaller scale, and we just actually did the grant cycle. So this next reporting time, you'll see that number is actually going to increase by quite a bit. The breakdown for the event funding, all of the city council and some of the city staff have actually received, and how the distribution of funds for this first grant cycle has gone. We will actually have another grant cycle that will start in April, and then we will do some finalization of the grants in the month of May. Here you can see the TOT report, July through January. What's actually a little bit more interesting is the next slide. I broke down what the results of our goal of increasing midweek business and then the overall occupancy. July, you can see we were at 17.7% above revenue from last year, 3% in occupancy. August, we had a really banner month, 18.9% above in revenue and 6% in occupancy. September, we were flat as far as the occupancy. We didn't have an increase there. So that actually gives us a great opportunity for this next year to really focus in on doing some promotions or helping focus some things as far as like having really working with the event organizers, especially like with the Avocado Margarita Festival and some of the other events in September. October, we did see another banner month of 17.7% above in revenue and 4% in occupancy. November did dip a little bit as far as occupancy, but we were up 8.6% in revenue and 1% in occupancy. Very proud of this, I have to say. December, 11.8% above in revenue and 4% higher in occupancy. That has not been seen for quite some time. So very, very proud of that. That really has a lot to do with the partnerships that we're doing, the promotions that we're doing. We were a little bit more aggressive as far as the marketing and the PR that we had in the month of December. and also in January, which you can see that that's definitely reflected here, with a 16.5% increase in revenue over last year, and then we were up in 3% in occupancy. So good numbers. Good numbers. So we share this success with the lodging community as well as the business community, the city, you know, all of the efforts that we're all doing, all of the ambassadors out there too. Morro Bay is a place that people love to come to, and thankfully they're coming this winter. Moving forward here is the adjusted budget that we have for the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau. As you can see, for the assessment dollars coming in, $704,019. $915. Cooperative advertising, what that is. We have offered a lot of new pay-to-play programs that was involved with the iBrochure as well as the San Francisco Chronicle, and then also including the visitor guide. So we are bringing in some additional revenue there. And then we have a financial reserve at $35,245, which totals a revenue of $750,160. As you can see, the breakdown of expenses, the administration is low in comparison to a lot of other bureaus. Usually other bureaus you see at about 35-40%. We're actually hovering around the 25% range there. But there's over $542,000 going towards marketing and PR activities, which I'm very, very proud of, and I think a lot of that has to do with the board of directors really kind of setting up the success for the organization, as well as my predecessor and other staff. So we share, again, these successes as a group, not just individually. So moving forward here, just how we're trending with the budget. We're at 33.9% in Bureau administration. 63.7% in Tourism Bureau marketing. A lot of that is prepaid type of advertising, print, etc., that was happening in the low season, and also focusing again on the midweek business. Public relations were at about 50%, and then with our marketing firm, we're at 52.3%. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Haugen. We'll start with you, Mr. Heddy. Questions or comments?
Thank you, Brent. Excellent presentation, making some great, great progress. And get back to the beginning. A couple of questions there. Email inquiries, just real quick, like, that seems low. Is that, would that include like social media or just direct email?
Yep, the email inquiries are the email inquiries that the visitor center only receives. So if people request information or if they have a question about Morro Bay, we don't receive a lot of emails for the visitor center. The visitor at morrobay.org is actually on the morrobay.org website at the bottom. They actually get a lot more phone calls, and they get a lot more people actually coming in versus email. We've actually been seeing a lot more inquiries because we included a new form on the morrobay.org website where people can actually request visitor guides and other information. So that's actually not reflected specifically for the visitor center because that comes directly to our office.
Got it. And then also, with regard to the ability to capture an inquiry, are you aware of any systems out there that are able to log or track data? For instance, I come into the city, and I pop in, and I say, hey, I'm looking for those famous fish and chips. And is there any way to capture, did I, in essence, go there? Now, obviously, you're not going to follow that person all the way to there and document if they indeed did eat, but are there any systems you know of tracking or following captures for inquiries?
There definitely could be. One of the things that was actually suggested last year that we do is to have, you know, some sort of a piece of paper that would include the information on where the visitor center staff are actually directing people to go. The challenge with that is that, you know, with my background being with the Resource Conservation District, I really hate having additional paper to be used. And oftentimes, you know, people are coming in for a couple of hours. It might be 2 or 3 hours. And so there's a lot of recommendations that's actually given to the actual visitor coming in the door. Visitor center staff typically will provide a visitor guide to the person coming in, so that way they can take a look at what else they can do if they happen to come back for another trip to Morro Bay. We do want to try to figure out some sort of system to where it's not going to, you know, create additional carbon footprints out there. So if council has any suggestions, we can definitely look at that. You know, we were looking at one point in time and doing some sort of laminated card, but again, you know, it's hard to say that if they're going to actually physically take it to an actual business, or and then we'd have to have multiple ones too. So we just have to figure out a really good and more an efficient system to be able to do that. But I do agree with you, it'd be really interesting to see and how we can actually track from when they're inquiring at the visitor center to actually doing that, the actual activity or going to the actual restaurant.
Great. I knew that would be a difficult question, but I just wondered if you had run across, you know, any systems that were out there that might have done that.
Well, so my dad actually used to run a dairy farm, and I don't think it would, probably would be too legal to, like, tag people as they're coming in. But
hey, you never know.
But, I mean, you know, technology is going really far, John, so yeah. maybe there's a way in how we can
That's
do that
true.
In the future.
That's true. Quick question on your TOT report. By the
yes.
way, congratulations on a wonderful increase this year on the actual totals. And compared to budget, not only, but also
right.
compared to previous years. Just noted vacation rental receipts are a significant portion. And I wondered how they compared to previous years. Are we uptrending with regard to vacation rentals? And what does that look like for us as a city?
Well, the Tourism Bureau doesn't really handle vacation rentals, but there's a big reason why that we're seeing a huge increase compared to last year. Because of the business audits that have been happening, we've been hearing from a different folks that a lot of vacation rentals now have the business license. They're actually working with realtors within the area. So, I mean, we are going to be seeing an increase specific to that. You know, because the marketing and because the efforts that we're doing is definitely also helping the vacation rentals as well as the campgrounds and RV parks within the area. So it's something that we do look at. You know, of course, my prime focus is the hotels, motels, inns, and B&Bs. Mm-hmm. That's where the biggest opportunity that we have to be able to move the needle, increase occupancy as well as revenue. But good question.
Good. And one last question, if I may. About a year and a half ago, or maybe a year ago, we had a gentleman who was out, Roboto, I believe. Was that his name? Carl Roboto, yeah. That came out and gave a rather interesting presentation on more or less the status of our city in mm-hmm. terms of its marketing. And I just wondered if you had any comparative data with regard to the Tourism Bureau's budget for marketing versus area and or other cities, and how does that compare?
You know, unfortunately, I don't have that data. Carl Roboto was actually prior to my coming into the Bureau, so I do have access to the information. One of the things that I will let you know, Councilmember Heading, is that, and the rest of the council and staff, that one of the goals that we're planning on doing is doing some additional research in this next fiscal year. So I know you're planning on attending the annual stakeholder meeting, and so you'll be hearing a little bit more about those goals and objectives. Truthfully, research from year to year, the way that destination marketing is actually working and it's changing, you can look at different age groups, et cetera, but one of the things that we're actually going to be focusing on as we look into the future is actually lifestyle groups, and that seems to be more of the trend. It's not so much about, you know, trying to reach the boomers, trying to reach the Gen Xers and the millennials, because a lot of those different groups have very similar interests. You know, you have a boomer who's actually interested in going surfing, and you have a millennial that's interested in surfing. So we're kind of moving away from doing, you know, the traditional age group, and we're looking more at lifestyle groups. When it comes to marketing, in my past history, I will tell you that administration typically is a lot higher, and there's less spent on marketing and PR activities. And again, I'm very proud in the fact that the way that our organization is set up and structured, that we're dedicating about 75% of the funds to marketing and PR activities and sales activities as well. You don't really see that a lot in other bureaus. You usually see a lot more expenses when it comes to overhead, salaries, etc. So I think the way that our organization has been set up and the way that we're going to grow and the trajectory that we're actually going into, I think we're actually going to still continue seeing kind of that 25% around that 25% administration and 75% going to marketing and PR and sales activities.
Great.
That's my goal.
Great. Well, thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you.
You guys are doing great work. Thanks.
Matt, would you like to go ahead?
Actually, yes, Brent. I have two questions. looking ahead at, looking behind at last year's numbers and looking at the numbers in terms of your allocating budget-wise, are your numbers were X last year, and looking ahead, are you going to, and the numbers seems you're going to put the same amount of money towards this coming year, and it's pushing out marketing. Are you going to increase it, or is it going to be the same as last year?
The numbers will actually increase for budget for this next year.
And will that coincide with the percentage of?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We're staying very consistent as far as the amount of dollars that are going to be focused in on sales, marketing, and PR activities in comparison to administration.
Great. That's my question. Thank you.
Okay. That was easy.
Christine?
Thank you. Great presentation. What I think that I realized as I was reading it and then as you were talking about it is this really is a testament to a BID, a business improvement district, because this money is only available because the business owners, the hotels, bed and breakfasts, fill in if I've forgotten any, hotel motels, they've pulled their own resources. This isn't
Correct.
Money that's coming from the general fund. This is money that's coming from businesses in our community that want to market our community. So they are putting in extra funds for this to happen. And when you look at the growth over since 2010, it's clear that this is one way to increase not just your own business's profit, but to also, you know, help the city and increase sales to retail stores, restaurant stores, and adventure tourism people. So
right.
I wanted to, really, you can clearly see it, especially on the five-year document that you attached. So for anyone else.
That is thanks to John Myers. You know, John Myers is actually on our board just this last year, and John was definitely a numbers guy, and he put that report together. So I wanted to definitely provide that to you guys so that way you could take a look at how we've been able to impact not just the payers into the assessment, but how we've been able to actually impact the city and the businesses here.
Right. It's another example of a very strong partnership that you can do between city and private industry. It works really well in this case. So grateful for the hotels are wanting to continue that investment,
et cetera. And so it gives a great opportunity for them to be able to connect with the bureau, connect with the lodging community, and also connect with the visitor. Because, you know, they're definitely a great market and great customer of theirs. But I usually try to educate different businesses, too, in saying that, you know, the city of Morro Bay provides funding for the visitor center. You know, if you have a brochure that you want to actually supply there, you know, you're definitely welcome to do that. And so I usually try to do some education along with some of the promotions that we're doing. But we've had a lot of businesses that have just kind of come out of the woodwork and saying, this is great. I'm glad that, you know, we're all working together. They've also been able to provide a lot of opportunities for visitors to come into the city. We did have a good December. And a lot of that has to do with some of the small events that were happening throughout the month of December. You know, sometimes it's not always the big events. We maintained a holiday happenings page that included, you know, events that were happening at churches, at businesses, at restaurants, etc. So it really gave people that opportunity to have that authentic Morro Bay experience. And so I think that's one of my goals, is to continue on with that, because we are all partners together. We all will prosper together if we work together. So I'm always happy that in the fact that when I can educate and people have that light bulb moment where it's like, aha, it's like this is really going to be good for me, but it's also going to be good for the city, it's going to be good for the lodging community. So I think when they see that whole win-win-win situation, I think it's, I love seeing that.
Right. So then, I mean, it's certainly, if you look at the numbers, 9,300 people are crossing the threshold in 6 months. This is a six-month figure, correct?
Correct.
June. Okay. So excuse me? Yeah? Is that correct? So it's
July 1st through the end of January.
So okay. So a few more. Okay.
Yep.
So little over half a year, 9,300 people crossing the threshold of the visitor center. So if you have a retail business or a restaurant and you're not in there, you really need to get in
right.
there. Then I'm wondering, too, how many people are coming in looking for a public restroom?
You know, if you look under other, if you see the other, that's typically where we're seeing a lot of the numbers,
right.
because we don't have specifically a category for public restroom. The nice thing that the staff are doing too is giving direction to the public restroom that's located at Grandma's. They will also call to make sure that the business is open. Just in case if it happens to be like right before that they're opening, so just so they don't make, you know, an extra special trip about a block away.
Okay.
I did want to go back, Christine, to the previous comment that you had as well. That's the one thing, too, that we wanted to include a lot of the tourism-related businesses in the visitor guide. We did an update of the visitor guide this last year. We did include retail restaurants, etc., ones that were really more dedicated to visitors. You know, obviously we're not going to put every single business in there, but we definitely wanted to try to appeal, you know, what visitors were looking for. And that really, there was no cost to the business community to be able to be there in it as a listing. We are going through visitor guide production right now, and that's going to be happening in this next guide as well. So again, we want to make sure that we're having relevant information for the visitor coming in. But getting back to your other point in the number under other, there are a number of people who are looking for public restroom. And so it's unfortunate that the building that we're currently in doesn't have one. There is a possibility. We have had some conversations with the landlord and the family who actually owns that building. They would be open to that, but in my last conversation with the new contact, we would have to assume actually all of the expense to be able to put in a handicapped accessible restroom.
Okay, and then when does your lease expire on that building?
I believe we have about 1 year left on the lease. I would have to double check on that, Christine.
Okay, great, thanks. And then have you ever done any correlation as to, you know, we're getting a lot of visitors in the visitor center, but we're getting a low email inquiry. I'm wondering, are most folks who are walking into the visitor center, are they also spending the night in Morro Bay? Do you know that? Is there a way to capture that, or are they sort of our day trippers?
From what I've actually what I understand from a lot of the staff at the visitor center, I would say it's probably about 50% staying overnight. We do get a lot of referrals from the lodging community. That's the really beautiful thing about that. Not just the hotels, motels, inns, B&Bs are actually directing people to come to the visitor center, but we're also getting referrals from the campgrounds and also the RV parks. And so I think that they know that it's a great resource, and that way they don't have to have like full racks, you know, at their locations to be able to provide that information. And the other beautiful thing is, too, the visitor center is open, you know, consistently from 9 until 5, 7 days a week. There's only 3 days where, top of your head?
I have a report at home that has all of that information,
okay.
detailed
great.
Information, and I am bringing it to the stakeholder meeting.
Okay, great.
So we'll be covering it, and hi, I'm Joan Solu for the record, sorry. And I will be bringing it to the stakeholder meeting. We'll be covering it there. Morro Bay has, I can tell you confidently that over the past 5 years, Morro Bay has gained significant market share on the city of San Luis Obispo, the city of Paso Robles, and on our favorite mothership, Pismo Beach. So.
Okay, great. Thank okay. you. Thanks very much. Yeah,
yeah, I'd really hate to quote because ADR changes, okay. you know, as the market changes.
Sure.
At one time, we were at about 112, 119. But again, that the ADR has actually been increasing over the amount of time. As far as occupancy, we're at about average between 4-5% for okay. just Morro Bay. As a countywide, I would have to get that information. I can definitely provide that for staff and council.
Okay, great. And that's just two more questions because sure. I really just want to just focus a little bit on the document that you gave to us. And folks at home should really take it's really fascinating, this overview, 5-year overview, because you can see how things have moved through the system. And I think what I'm noticing is it's a steady increase in occupancy rate with a rather stable average daily rate. So in other words, we're not making more TOT because we're raising the rates. Right. I think it's really important right. people look at those two numbers, though it's an incremental increase. And so that's a good thing because you don't want to be gouging
right.
folks
right.
so that they don't return. So I think what you can see in 5 years is a really wonderful, you know, span of time to take a look and to see it's you have genuine trends that emerge. My question is about the column on the far right side. There are two columns, the sales tax columns.
Mm-hmm.
And the sales tax numbers, are they year to year? So in other words, if there's when I see sales tax increase 1.3%, that's just over the year prior to that, correct?
It's usually based off of the report that we receive from the city. And so it's usually a little bit behind as far as the sales tax. So it's not quite within the same time frame. Does
okay.
that make sense?
Yeah. So like in 2011, you're showing a 1.3% change in sales tax. And then in 2012, is that me breathing? Oh, okay. All right. No, it's not me. I'm not Darth Vader.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. It's a little nerve-wracking. Okay, and then I see like an 8.2% change. There it is again. And I'm just wondering, are we comparing it, for example, is that in comparison 2012 sales tax numbers as they relate to 2011?
It would be 11 and 12 because essentially sales tax, it's done quarterly, correct, the report?
Yes.
So does that cover, now please correct me if I'm wrong because I don't have a sales tax report. I don't know who actually does that for the city, but Susan, can you speak to that? So when we receive the numbers, usually we're a few months behind, correct?
We generally are. Good evening, everyone. When we get our numbers from Hinterleiter de Lamas, we'll get the numbers for the, like for example, the ones that we got for December, we just got in February, late February, early March. It takes a while because you don't, at the end of December, they don't report to the state board until January. January, you know, state board doesn't get the information out until maybe, you know, 2/3 of the way through the month. Following month, so you've got a good lag behind
right.
before you actually get the numbers. It can be 2 to 3 months before you have
okay.
the numbers for the previous quarter.
Okay, you know, I'll follow up
okay.
later because we're looking at years at a time, so I think maybe I'll just get educated on what the goal was for that,
yes.
just so I know. But it shows an increase, and then I'm just wondering about the reason this Embarcadero area was selected is to compare, you know, a high tourist area. Because there's the sales tax for the Embarcadero percent change. I'm wondering if you were able to pull data from that area just to show
right.
correspondence to, you know, a heavily visited tourist area.
It is, you know, and you know, we definitely are promoting the whole city of Morro Bay, but it is, you know, a lot of the businesses along the Embarcadero do attract, you know, more of the visitorship here in the city. So. I think as far as comparisons, yes, we wanted to see and what the relationship was in between, you know, how we're increasing as far as occupancy and revenue and how that relates to sales tax.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's really interesting. I would just encourage anyone who's interested to dig into the numbers and then also to attend or to watch on AGP. We'll carry it live, I'm believing,
yes.
the stakeholder meeting. So, yeah, I encourage folks to be there. I think it is me breathing. You don't think it is? Okay. I... unfortunately cannot attend. I will be out of town, but I will be watching. I'll get the DVD. So I know that,
you know, some have been good, some of it has been bad, and some of it has, you know, been clarifying information. So that's what I'm available for. So anybody who has questions, too, they can actually contact the Bureau office at 225-1570 when Charter is actually working. Our phones have been down pretty much all day today. Otherwise, you can also email me at brent@morrobay.org.
Thanks, Mr. Haugen. I actually do have one question myself.
Sure.
And, pardon us for taking a little time on this.
No.
But
that's what I'm here for.
When you do look at these numbers and seeing our budget, you see just how important the TOT revenue is for the city. And just to, again, to point out, as you did in your presentation, which I really appreciated, the general fund funding that is allocated to the visitor center of $100,000 and then also $40,000 for events. And that's something that allows us to market for more than just the hotel and
exactly.
Heads and beds, TOT-oriented businesses. So I did want to talk just briefly about the events. At our last meeting, I believe it was, we talked as a council about continuing the Morrow 4th events and
sure.
Actually adopting that to keep that going, particularly the daytime activities. And we did talk briefly, seeing that there is some residual unallocated event funds. I believe our director, Recreation Director Joe Woods, already reached out to you to...
No.
No, he hasn't. Okay.
No.
Well, I did want to put that on your radar because we are looking at ways to make sure the event goes along and particularly the daytime activities. So expect a call or some form of outreach from Mr. Woods.
Sure. You know, and there are some funds yet available. About $11,500 is yet available for the next grant cycle. So, you know, I definitely will look forward to hearing from Joe. But no, nobody has actually reached out to me as of yet. But I'm excited. I understand that there's going to be some fun activities for families to be able to come into Morrow Bay for the 4th of July. So I'm very excited, in fact, that we're actually going to have something.
Yeah, so we are too, and I guess we'll stay tuned on that, on those details, and
good.
You guys will be in touch. So thanks again for your great work.
Thank you.
And we'll move right along to our Civic Spark presentation with Ms. Olson and Mr. Boisvert, led by Ms. Olson. Thank you.
Okay.
Please introduce yourself. You have about 10 minutes.
First off, I want to thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Smuckler, council members, city staff, for allowing me to come this evening and speak with you regarding Civic Spark and what we're doing to help Morrow Bay implement your climate action plan goals. My name is Anna Olson. I am one of four Civic Spark team members here on the Central Coast. We are hosted at the Slo County Air Pollution Control District. And each of our team members is working with two jurisdictions. I am working here in Morrow Bay with Cindy Jason and assisting with your climate action plan implementation. A brief background on our program. AmeriCorps is a civil society program that is engaging young adults in intensive community service work. And Civic Spark is a new AmeriCorps program here in the state of California. It stems from the governor's initiative on AmeriCorps and is created through a partnership with the Office Planning and Research as well as with the Local Government Commission. There are 9 Civic Spark regions throughout California, and they are helping the local communities pursue clean energy, implement sustainable community strategies, as well as reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Before our Central Coast team began in October, the Slo County Air Pollution Control District surveyed each of the 8 jurisdictions' climate action plans, and they found 9 common measures. Those common measures were then ranked among all the jurisdictions in order of priority implementation. The top 3 measures that are highlighted in green are the 3 measures that had the highest ranking in that survey. And those are the 3 measures that our Central Coast team is working on over our 11-month term. The first measure is small-scale on-site solar PV. Small-scale, just so you know, is 10 kilowatt or smaller system. You can see here these are your climate action plan implementation goals by 2020 that are outlined in your CAP. In 2014, Morro Bay did have 30 residential solar permits and one non-residential solar PV permit, so you are well on your way to reaching your climate action plan goals. So, good job. In addition, we are helping the city with compliance of AB 2188, which is solar permit streamlining. We have provided the planning department with the requirements of AB 2188, as well as the recommendations for the Office of Planning and Research's Solar Permitting Guidebook and Traffic, which is pretty exciting. This is our fourth presentation that we have given. We have three more upcoming this month, including, very important, our SLO County APCD Board of Directors on the 25th of March, where we'll hopefully lay the groundwork for two more years of this Central Coast Civic Spark program. Additionally, we have been developing customized outreach materials and distributing those throughout the communities. I have some if anybody here is interested. And then the third measure is the energy audit at retrofit program. As I mentioned before, we are tying in the outreach measure for this in with all of our outreach. These, of course, are your goals for 2020. And finally, as a way to tie together all three of our measures, we are having a DIY workshop at a Thursday night farmers market in SLO. It is on May 28th. It'll be on Hyera and Broad, so we welcome everybody to come to that. We will be providing homeowners, businesses, and renters throughout the county with information on energy efficiency measures, green buildings, solar, alternative fueled vehicles, as well as showcase successful retrofits and sustainable technologies by residents and businesses. And I would like to give you my contact information. I would like to thank you all for your time and welcome any questions, and also welcome up my fellow Civic Spark staff to help answer those questions.
Thanks for the presentation, Ms. Olson. Mr. Makowiecki, would you like to lead us off here?
And I'd like to ask one question. If someone would like to get involved with your organization and volunteer, do they contact you, or how do they go about it?
Yes, they can contact me directly, or they can contact us. There's contact information on our website, which is slowcleanair.org/program/civicspark.
And does that go also for adolescents, high school age people?
Yeah, we welcome.
Do you have outreach to the high schools?
All volunteers, yes. And we're working with the Clean Air Ambassadors from the SLO APCD, which is in elementary schools as well. So, yeah.
Thank you.
No questions. Just great presentation. Thanks for giving us the update. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Quick question, maybe for educational standpoint, a small-scale on-site solar, what's small-scale? Definition for me.
It's 10 kilowatts or smaller.
10 kilowatts or smaller, okay. And our goal, it went by so fast I didn't get to write it down, but what is our goal?
So your goal is going to be 80 residential, 20 income qualified, and 20 businesses.
By what period of time?
By 2020.
By 2020. Okay. Minor. And to go along with that, with regard to that, the average business in Morro Bay, would the majority of them qualify as being of this scale?
And the main issue with businesses is most businesses rent, and so it would have to be at the discretion of the owner of the building whether or not they would be able to get solar.
Got it. And what about I hear about the proliferation, if you will, of solar farms and the availability of connecting to a grid as opposed to an installation of solar directly on site. Is that something that is increasing and will also count towards goal and be part of the whole process?
So that is increasing, but that is not part of this specific goal. This is strictly for small scale.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And I believe that's part because our program, our climate action program, is focused on Morro Bay. It's a hybrid of what was proposed throughout the county, and so we're thinking within the city, therefore the small residential and commercial. And I would just like to just comment on What I've seen as we've adopted this climate action plan, knowing that it's an additional for staff workload, and it's an important thing that we need to accomplish, but it's also something that doesn't come with a lot of extra funds for us, for our community to wrestle with. And so I might be speaking a little more than what staff may be comfortable with, but I would say that your addition and help with getting this done is from my perspective, really important, and is a key part of us being able to achieve these goals as we go forward. And I know, as being a rep for the Air Pollution Control District, there may be some debate about whether this program is worth continuing at the next board meeting. So if anyone really is listening to this and hears the value that you're bringing to the table, I would certainly recommend that you reach out to the Air Pollution Control directors before this next meeting and let them know. I certainly will be advocating that we continue the program.
We really appreciate that. Thank you.
Just one plug. I'm Rob Boisvert. I'm the regional supervisor for this team. You can go to
/CivicSpark. My name again is Anna Olson. That's A Olson, OLSEN, at civicspark.lgc.org. And then my direct phone number is 805-781-4103.
And from phone call to visit, what would the turnaround time be?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
For a small business person, from phone call to your visit on site, what's the usual turnaround time?
Same day if it's...
Oh, my gosh, that's great.
Okay. I'll gladly come running to help.
Okay.
Great, thank you all for your
work. Put me down.
Thank you.
Okay, we will now move into public comments, which is open to anyone to speak on items not on the agenda. We will start public comments, excuse me, sir, by leading off with our biz spotlight as tradition. Which tonight is going to feature, thanks to Jan Goldman, it's going to feature our Astero Bay Alliance of Care representatives. I believe we have both of them here, Nancy Castle and Linda Fidel. And Ashley Sharon O'Leary, please. Yeah, there we are.
Good evening, council, staff, and community. My name is Nancy Castle, and I'm very pleased to be a part of the Astero Bay Alliance for Care that was started several years ago. In the last year, in 2014, we were very excited because two of our projects really came to fruition. The one being the Monday night meals here at the Betts Hall that Linda Fidel and I are a part of, and the other being the Community Resource Center, of which Sharon O'Leary serves as its main director. Neither of these projects would have happened without the support of the city. We are incredibly grateful to the city for giving us a waiver of fees for use of the Vets Hall on Monday nights for the meals. They also have provided for the Community Resource Center space in the Chamber of Commerce building on the corner of Kennedy Way and Harbor, or whatever it is. No, it's not Kennedy Way, it's that other, Piney. Thank you. I'm a native of Morro Bay. I would like to turn this over now to Sharon. She's going to share with you information about the Community Resource Center.
Mayor Pro Tem Smuckler, City Council staff. I'm Sharon O'Leary. I direct the Resource Connection Office over at the Chamber of Commerce building. I'm hoping that City Council got a copy of our biannual report, and as well as the resource checklist that we issue out of the office, which give you a little bit of background of what the outreach effort is all about. We join a group of resource centers along the coastal area. We're pretty new. We're establishing sort of protocols and trying to understand the needs in Morro Bay. The way the statistics look right now, there are about somewhere around 1,700-1,800 persons in Morro Bay, poverty level and below, about 1,200-1,300 in Los Osos, about 400-500 in Cayugas. We do all sorts of outreach things, as well as invite agencies to come out and meet clients at our office. So it's been pretty successful. We're looking forward to becoming just sort of more refined in our outreach effort. And I thank the City Council for their support.
Hi, Hi, I'm Linda Fidel. Together with Nancy Castle, we co-coordinate the Monday night food group dinners that are offered here in Veterans Hall. We started on January 6th of 2014. To date, we have served 2,590 persons a warm dinner on Monday night. Last night, we served 50 people. There are actually many more dinners than people because we also frequently are able to offer seconds and takeaways, so there's probably half again as many dinners as there were people served. We are currently serving between 45 and 55 guests of all ages on each of the Monday nights. It's mostly the good people of Morro Bay who are serving their fellow citizens these warm dinners. We estimate that over 100 citizens have been involved with the dinners in terms of preparing them. These people are loosely aligned with, but not necessarily members of, St. Peter's by the Sea Episcopal Church, St. Timothy's Catholic Church, the Circle of Friends, the Lions Club, Rock Harbor Fellowship, and Estero Bay Methodists. These people buy, prepare, serve, and clean up the dinner each Monday evening. It isn't easy, folks, and their goodies every Monday night free. In addition to that, we have 10 donors from last year who provided us with money that allows us to buy the paper products and the other things that we need to keep this effort going.
Linda, I'm going to ask you to start to wrap up, please.
I will.
Thank you.
The special part of that is that many of the people who provided money to us are neighbors. That is, they live right around Veterans Hall, and they have come over to see what we're doing, liked what they saw, and given us money to continue. Thank you.
Thank you.
I understand you want to wrap up, but I would like to say just one word, a couple of words
more.
Since you
control the cameras and the microphone.
Kill the mic, no. It may be hard work. It may be a lot of effort. It takes a lot of coordination. But one of the things it also is very fun. There are a lot of people who like to serve, need to serve, and this is an opportunity to do so. And one of the blessings that we try to create here is really a fine dining experience. And what we've noticed over the years is that in the beginning, people came to eat and left. Now people are coming and staying and talking. And there are a lot of local residents who are coming. We're seeing fewer of the people we know who are homeless, but we're still having our numbers up. So people are coming who have the need, but just can't make it. It does take some money. We're going to do some events this year. We're going to be being a part of the citywide yard sale. It will be at St. Peter's. We'll be able to start collecting stuff right after Christmas, Easter. And we'll have a place outside in our patio where people can bring stuff. So I know a lot of people are involved in a lot of elements of the yard sale, but if you have a few pieces you'd like to bring, the money will go to help fund the community dinners. And the other thing that I'm trying to promote is we're going to be doing some car art at the car show. Kenny Vesterfeld knows that I want to do this. He's in the back of the room. And AJP always has a booth to sell the DVDs of Cruise Night. We're going to have a little bit of extra room. We're going to have some, I picked up a jigsaw.
Okay, Nancy, we're going to have to cut you off there, but please come back
anyway,
and tell us more. As the
bring
car
down your
closer.
Old Pinewood Derbies and sell them for benefit.
All right. So public comment is open for items not in the agenda. You have 3 minutes, unless you happen to control the microphone, apparently. Welcome. And please state your name for the record.
Dane Sensor, Royal Grande. First, I'd like to read a little statement as I was sitting here waiting patiently. The city shall be committed to the purpose and will provide a level of municipal service and safety consistent with the responsive to the needs of the public. Dane Sensor is the public. I wanted to address an issue here. On February 10th, 1910, I spoke at the Board of Supervisors. My campaign was first initiated and supported by Sheriff Ian Parkinson. It was called Hands Out. Show love and respect, nothing else matters. Don't show love and respect, nothing else matters. I thought that campaign was going to be a healing process to the recent Hands Up, Don't Shoot, okay, which was a false narrative. This was something to heal. If you see the picture on my thing, it's a black hand and a white hand. It's a red hand and a white hand. It's a blue whatever hand. It means hands out. Offer hands out in something. Well, lo and behold, one of your commission parks commissioners, who is not vetted by, I guess, John Woods, who put this man in position, who now I believe, and I would like to have a declared letter saying he is fired, resigned, or no longer works for the city of Morro Bay. But you didn't do a very good job of vetting this man. This man is a deranged, demented, sick individual. All you have to do is go to his website, Cal Coast Fraud, and see what he did to me. Okay? He's threatening my life. He slandered me. He libeled me. He put my picture on his website and said I need to be in a straitjacket. Now, I don't know about you, but do you want your kids, your daughters, your wives to be put in jeopardy by somebody that works for you or has worked for you? I don't think so, and neither do I. This man is performing hate crimes. Go read some of his vile comments. Aaron Oakes, remember that name. Remember his website, Cal Coast Fraud. Aaron Oakes, I'll say it three more times if I have to, but you will remember his name because everybody in this county will know who this man is, and I will put a restraining order on him. I want him investigated.
My name is Lena Thomas. I'm a local business owner. I'm here tonight to deliver a few more petitions, filled petitions, objecting to the parklet on Main Street. I'd like to remind you that the petition is headed with the following words: not a bad idea, just a bad, not a bad idea, not a good location. That's all I'm here for. I'm also including a letter that you might have missed that was in the New Times or in the Bay News last week from a woman, Carol McPhee Norton. I'd ask that you each take the time to read this letter. There's a copy here for you. Thank you.
Okay, public comment is open. Anyone else to speak?
Yeah, not as good as that one. Good evening, council members. My name's Alex Beatty, and I live in Modesto. And I think you all got an email from me talking about hunting on Morro Bay. And I'm gonna don't have much time to go over this complicated issue. I'd like a few things I'd like to point out. I hope you saw some righteousness in the email. It's a very important issue. If you looked at the data, a survey done by Cal Poly some time ago showed 83% of the people in Los Osos against it, and it showed 8% willing to accept it. So hope that it's an important issue. It's been around a long time. It's coming up again. We're going to ask your help. Some of the disruptions associated with hunting, well, that went wrong. There's a I'll talk through it forward. There we go. Okay. You're aware there's a whole lot of disruptions caused by hunting. One of the biggest ones is access. That is a public body that it should be, is by law, is open to everybody. Hunters restrict access to certain parts of it. The biggest parts of Grassy Island, hard getting to the sand spit because the hunters are hanging out there and they have guns, and most people don't want to go there. Can you give me another clicker on that? One more, please. Disruptions of human activities. people don't like to go kayaking out there where the hunters are. They don't like walking along the bay when they do. Those are important issues in Morro Bay, and they're disrupted by hunters. And one more, please, and to keep going. The biggest complaint I hear from people is distress to dogs. Morro Bay loves its dogs. Dogs don't like gunshots. A lot of people do not walk their dogs on hunting days, and that's not that. I think somebody set their clock off too fast. I don't think that's quite fair because you counted while I'm setting up your thing. Anyway, let me quickly add on to what I like to eat is it. Past city councils have taken support of this issue. What I've asked you to do is send a letter to the Fish and Game Commission saying, yes, this is an important issue to my constituents. Looked out there, there are, on the average, talk to people, there's four hunters out there on the bay, and they disrupt it all. The proposals are, can you give me some of the proposals, please? This is a big one, and I think it's important to Morro Bay. Public perception of the area. We call ourselves a waterfowl area, and the public doesn't believe it when we have hunters out there. One of the big issues, let me get to this real quick. Morro Bay Bird Festival is a big deal here. We can't take them out there on hunting days because there's might be two hunters out there. Sorry about this, but I'm going to go back. I think I got shortchanged on time. Can I come back? I'll come back in 2 weeks.
No, and thank you for sending the email. We did receive that, but please do come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I hope you got to take a chance to look at that. Yeah.
All right. Public comment continues. Thanks, Ken.
I got this belonged to somebody that was up there before me.
Thanks ever so much, folks. Ken Vesterfeld, Morro Bay residents. Just speaking briefly on what Brent was talking about the public restrooms. You know, there's many public restrooms throughout Morro Bay. No signage, including the one on Main Street and Morro Bay Boulevard that the city rents for the purpose of city restroom. Small little sign, so maybe we can get them to go with that. Second of all, I'm sorry I'm a little bit tired here tonight. I just drove in. Has been said. Real estate agents need to get from underneath a rock and get healthy. Snakes live underneath a rock. Am I a snake? Hell no. Am I dumb as a rock? Absolutely, because I'm trying to find out why we are being punished for not knowing about this law and go back 4 years. I hope in the future that we can find out about this. Not only is it just the local real estate people, it's going to affect every real estate agent, which are thousands in the state of California. Heard a rumor, and may I say this, a rumor today that there's a war chest going on for the next election in Morro Bay from all the real estate agents in California. Please help us with this. Help us get through it. I agree with you that if there's a law that says we should have had one, let's go forward with it. One of the other misunderstandings is that the citizens of Morro Bay who don't know or don't have a business, everyone is going to be affected if you do business in Morro Bay. All the purveyors, anybody who has to pass it on, it's a cost of business. It's going to affect everyone. So hopefully in the future we can do that. Thank you very much.
Any other public comments? Jeremiah.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, City Council, City Staff. My name is Jeremiah O'Brien. I represent the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and I'll try to be quick. I realize they've only got 10 or 15 minutes. Oh, okay.
Divide that by five.
So in any case, the issue I'm here tonight to speak about is a sanctuary issue, which many of you are aware. that we've been dealing with here for the last several weeks and a couple of months. Yesterday, National Oceanic and Atmospheric put this letter on their website, and I assumed, frankly, that everyone would have had it, but I assumed wrongly, I think, so I'm going to leave this with Jamie, if you don't mind, and she can share it with you. But I'm not going to read the whole letter. It does say that we have concluded the nomination as submitted is not sufficient to move forward with a more detailed review. So it has been rejected, and I'm sure it will be resubmitted. As a matter of fact, as reading through the letter, they somewhat encourage a resubmission on this, and we have fought this now. This is the third time in many years. So the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, as well as the Port San Luis Organization and other affiliated groups that we work with, will continue our education on the sanctuary process. We will be having this will actually give us time to bring to you a study that we're having completed. It's under peer review currently. I think it's the only peer-reviewed study that will be presented to you. The other side study is not peer-reviewed. But in any case, I just wanted to bring that to your attention. It might free up some agenda time in the future. Thank you very much.
Any other public comment? Don't be shy.
Not shy.
Good evening, Bill Martini, Morro Bay. Just want to talk real briefly. I heard the other day that you're considering, and this has to do with the Dynegy property, the triangle piece that you just the city just got, and it mainly has to do with the parking lot that's being proposed there. And the wall, it's approximately a 6-foot wall that currently exists, and I know you're talking about taking that wall down to about 3 feet. I was down on the Embarcadero looking east and imagining what that wall would look like if it came down. First off, if that turns into a parking lot, you'll have a great view of a ton of cars. Secondly, what you're going to do is you're going to have a greater view of the switchyard. So when you're on the Embarcadero, if you drop that wall to 3 foot, all of a sudden, your view to the east will be PG&E's switchyard. So the thought being is, I think that wall serves a purpose as a buffer if you're using it as a parking lot to buffer the Embarcadero crowd from looking at additional cars, and also the switchyard.
Reginald Corolla, Adelaida, San Luis Obispo, Pomona, Chaplin, 639. Chaplain of Pomona 27. I'm here advocating for an old fraternal organization called the Grange. And you people, you're very ironic in that where it's been struggling outside your city limits, and Ogilvy, who's a livestock director with 4-H, probably has one of the most burgeoning, surprising elements in the Grange. We're under a major resurrection across the country with food, California organic, things that are going on, and we're a partnership, and our order is the patrons of the husbandry. We're farmers and ranchers, we're old-timers, we've been around a long time, and without food and without water, you're not going to go anywhere. You can have economy, hungry stomachs, people doing whatever. What I'm asking for, if you can, and nothing else, just go by, say hi to them. They're struggling. Very wealthy farmer next door managed to suck all the water out, so the well is pretty much there. They're hardy women. They've done a great job. They're our sisters. They're our matrons. And San Luis Obispo 639 supports it, and so does Pomona 27. In this county alone, you have 6 granges. Once again, we support patrons of husbandry. We are farmers and ranchers. We're miners. We're the backbone. We take soil, and we grow food. That includes viticulture, avocado farmers, wheat farmers, the fishermen out here. That's what we're about. Thank you for listening to me. Support Morrow 27. It's probably perhaps one of the oldest granges in this area. Used to be up in the hill in Morrow Bay until it burned down. It's got quite a history. Thank you. God bless you all.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council and close public comment. Just a couple quick follow-up comments to Mr. Vesterfeld. I'm not sure he's still here, but there was and has been a lot of work with the realty community, all the professionals that that we've been able to get in touch with over the last 3 weeks, including a recent memo that summarizes details about how realtors can get in touch with the city staff and negotiate through the process. One of the concerns that he raised was being penalized for not being aware of the code and the need for a business license, and that is the exact reason that the council initiated an amnesty period that ends this Friday, but city staff is committed to extending that to anyone that has got involved with the process and reached out to city staff. And that's something that if you are have any questions, please contact Jamie Boucher at City Hall to find out more details. The memo, I believe, is available if you request it. We have plenty of information online at the website for realtors or any other business people that are interested. And we've been working really hard to get the word out and ultimately trying to uphold the information and regulations that are in our current code. And we're in the process of updating that code and coming back with some suggestions about how we could refine that code going forward. So that is something, Ms. Boucher, what's your best number to be reached at? Okay, that's 772-6294. Great. And Jamie will take care of you if you have some questions there. Thanks to Mr. O'Brien for coming out about the sanctuary. We do have a future agenda item scheduled to discuss that. We'll have some information coming from Jeremiah's letter regarding what Noah's comments were. So I anticipate that at some point coming back to the council. And regarding Mr. Martoni's comments about Triangle parking lots and future parking improvements there at the old Dynegy power plant. Yes, we are talking about lowering that wall. I believe that there will be further communication discussion with council on that. One of the ideas, though, is to also expand a walkway on the east side of the Embarcadero going towards the rock that could also involve some visual view shed softening, such as tree plantings and so forth, to help keep the switchyard from becoming our feature item out there. So definitely something to keep in mind as we go forward. So thanks for your comments on that. It's a good one. Any other comments from council members? Response to public comment?
Yes. I would just, and I'm sorry, sir, I didn't. He left. Dean, I wrote Spencer, but I'm not sure I got the right last name. Sitzer? Anyway, just a comment that on a future agenda item, there is a review of the policy for appointing appointees to commissions. And so that will be under review, and I just wanted to make that comment in response to that.
Thank you for that. Just a quick question to the council. We have a public hearing item. We usually try to start those at 7. Okay. John? Okay. A lot of A5. Can I get a motion to approve items 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Christine. Second by John. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously. Mr. Livick, would you like to go ahead and introduce A5, which is the Water Reclamation Facility Project Update?
A5 is the Water Reclamation Facility Update.
And Christine, if you do have anything.
I think the question will be, let me guess, the letter from the regional board?
Exactly, yes. Okay. That's why I have pulled A5. Others may have had a different reason.
I guess if there's any other questions while I'm fumbling through. Usually don't print this out, but now I did. So,
and just for public, we will open for public comments on this item, and I actually didn't open it for the rest of the consent. So we'll get back to that just to make sure that there wasn't any comments on consent on the other consent items before we move on. After we finish this item, sorry.
On February. Thank you, AGP. On February 19th this year, Mr. Ken Harris, the executive officer from the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, or Water Board, sent a letter to our city manager, Dave Buckingham, along with the district manager for the Cayuga Sanitary District, congratulating us on selecting our preferred site and, for the most part, wishing us well on moving forward together and evaluating the options ahead of us to develop that site as a new water reclamation facility. They also encourage us to look towards groundwater recharge as the primary use of that reclaimed water. And let us know that they'll be watching the clock on us also, that we really have until, he didn't give a specific date, so I'm going to say December 31st, 2021, to complete the project, which is a little over 5 years, which fits right in line with the council directed schedule from last year. I think it was resolution 17-14 seems to be burned into my memory for some reason. That resolution was not based on an arbitrary date picked out of the sky. It was based on the knowledge that NPDES permits are good for 5 years. And the language in the I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit, but it basically says that we our goal is to have that plant online within 5 years of our next permit, which falls right in line with the language that is presented to us from Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris also goes on to talk about developing a management plan for our groundwater basins and, you know, recommending that we work together with other stakeholders on developing those plans, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. So it's all in all, I think, a good letter, but also did give us there is a clock running, and we need to keep an eye on that clock and continue to move forward in an expeditious manner.
Great. Thank you for that, Mr. Livick. Can we limit the comments to questions at this point, then I'll open it for public comment, then we get back to discussion. Christine, if you'd like to.
No questions.
Okay. Matt, go ahead.
I do have a question, but it's not about the letter, Rob. It's to page number one on the staff report, looking at the various contracts and looking at how they're going to play out. Specifically on the first one, GFR Consulting Amendments 1 through 4, there's additional monies there. Are these additional monies there? You want to catch up there, Rob, or you want me to keep going?
Go ahead.
Okay. These monies look like they total close to $200,000 additional. Is this just because we're getting things in line and those costs were expected, or were those extra costs? Looking specifically at the four amendments under JFR Consulting.
As we move forward with the project, those are additional scope items that we requested from Mr. Rickenbach and Mr. Nunley as we move forward. One of the major ones was the work to look at the CMC site. That was amendment number two, which added $91,000 to the project, a major scope increase. But it did verify that the council preferred.
And then falls under the existing contract and is simply expected to be an addendum that the city doesn't have to go out and do an RFP for other agencies to make bids that might be competitive, et cetera, for the same scope of work addition.
I did reply to that question via email, so I'll just basically paraphrase what
didn't I didn't get to it. Sorry.
What I said in my email is that council requested that we expedite moving forward with the fatal flaws analysis. John Rickenbach and Mike Nunley have experience and knowledge on this project that probably could not be replicated at this point in time in fairly short order. Also, in California, the way we select consultants is via qualifications-based, and then we negotiate a price to within the budget. So you select the most qualified person for the job, and then you negotiate a fee, is the way professional services are consulted. It's not really a bid process that we use for professional services. Given those two issues, that's the reason we move forward with Rickenbach, is for this remaining scope of work to get us through the fatal flaws analysis and to get that done in rapid order, where a couple of the fatal flaws require them to be done in the springtime, that we keep them moving forward. Now, there will be probably a major RFP coming up for that they are, quite frankly, going to go after, along with several other firms, and that's the overall project management as we move forward. And that will be going out for RFP, because that's a major work effort. And although they're doing a great job so far, I would like to see if there is some competition for that work. And the way I see it, they're the ones to beat. And I know they hate it every time I say this, but they have the job to lose, really. They know the area. They'll do a great job, but we also need to do our due diligence and see who else is out there that could work, and maybe provide us with maybe a different perspective. So this will be the last contract amendment that we'll see with Mr. Rickenbach. The next one will, if they are successful with the project management, will be a whole new contract. And we'll be going to RFP, because it'll be a major work effort moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Quick question on the CMC study and analysis. We had commitments from the CMC and the Water Board that would be funded by residual fine money that CMC had accumulated for some of the issues that they had at the plant. Have we received that reimbursement yet?
No, we have not received it yet.
But the commitment still stands.
I believe they have not told us otherwise, so we'll be submitting an invoice to the board and expecting payment for us. They told us that they would commit to funding it.
Great. And also, just to confirm, each one of these amendments and a lot of the site analysis to date, including the CMC option, is really working towards a final solution and would be necessary in environmental analysis and study for the final project decision. So we're going to need to be able to exhibit that we've done our due diligence in looking at alternatives.
That is correct. We need to do a detailed alternatives analysis as part of the environmental review, and this work effort is not... Any of this work effort culminates in the project, so it's all needed to get where we need to go in the next 5 years.
Great. One last quick question, and actually, would you mind confirming that the JPA agenda for this Thursday has been posted online? I heard before the meeting that someone had a hard time finding that. So I will, while you're doing that, though, open it up for public comment on this item.
I am 99.9% sure that it is posted, but while you're opening it for public comment, I'll check.
Any public comment on this item? Please come forward. You have 3 minutes.
Yes, Barry Brandon, Morro Bay. This letter from the Regional Water Quality Board is a nice kudo to all the work we've done, but there's a large section that they're asking us to do that we have never discussed in the sewer project, and that is the challenge that they're asking for is talking about groundwater recharge. Now, groundwater recharge is an issue that our neighboring community of Los Osos is facing, because they're running out of water, and they're basically at a loss, and because their wells that they have are...
Water management plan is, we currently are planning the project, and the water reclamation component is going to be a phased approach. How do you see, reading between the lines, do you see us really working towards achieving this as what you're reading they're asking us to do, or is this going to need to be something that we're going to rehash with them?
Well, I know the executive director views is that water for human consumption is the highest value of water resources in the state, even though that he is from the Central Valley. It's kind of a dichotomy there. But groundwater recharge was considered in the preamble leading us up to this point. In all of our documents, we perhaps haven't studied it in great detail, but it is one of the council goals is to look towards, that is one of the areas of reclaimed water is to use groundwater recharge. One of the studies that we'll be doing in the fatal flaws analysis is taking a preliminary look at the basin and its potential for groundwater recharge. Not to get into the weeds on groundwater recharge, but there are many issues regarding that in that basin. It's a small basin. We don't want to put water in the ground that we can't recover. We don't need a second ocean outfall, in other words. So we'll be looking at those details. And the method that Mr. Brannon is exactly right. And I've stated this probably at every JPA for the last 6 months or so. The end use of the water will drive the treatment process that we move forward with. So we do definitely, if we're looking with an eye towards groundwater recharge, that does steer our facilities master management plan, and it is an item that's addressed in the RFP for facilities master planning that this council will be reviewing with the Cayucas Board at the JPA. Great. And the JPA agenda is online. I believe it was online Friday afternoon. I know that we changed out one of the pages in it because Mr. Leivick can't cut and paste and re-edit his document. So he had a couple of typos in there that he had to correct.
All right. Thanks for the full confession. Council discussion, any items? Christine, would you like to lead us off?
Sure, yeah. Thanks for giving us the background on the letter. I think that it's always also good to get additional information on the contract and the consultant expenses as we have at this point. I think for me, as a council member, I see this letter came in February 19, so it would be great if letters like this come in, just shoot them to us in an email if that seems appropriate to staff, because I think this was it's like a communication that gives us a lot of information about what the Water Board's expectations are. So I think the sooner we have that information, that the better we can start to process it. And then I'm wondering if the WRFCAC, and again, you know, staff can decide, you know, obviously council would want to see something like this, but because they are our appointed board to help us through this process, I would also encourage you to consider sending something like this to them, so they're also kind of a heads up. And I don't know if this is on their agenda to discuss. I thought I looked through their agenda quickly. I didn't see it.
I didn't put it in there.
So okay. So certainly, perhaps they could get this prior to the meeting. And then perhaps in some way, they can't really discuss it if it's not on the agenda, but at least they could get the communication directly from the city, the letter. It's in this course, it's in this agenda. And it isn't like we didn't put it out for the public because it was in our on our agenda today, but I think something like this is a pretty big deal. And just briefly, it gives us an idea of exactly what the water board's going to want from us. So I think it's helpful information. And also it talks about something we haven't yet discussed, which is they're encouraging Morro Bay, Cayucas, and other local stakeholders to form a groundwater sustainability agency. But I think, thankfully, we've put water on our goals list. So it's just another thing that would be fall under our water goal for some kind of a follow-up at some point to decide about how we would proceed with something like that. But yes. I think in general, it's great to get this kind of a letter from the Water Board, and it sort of lets us know for a while they were maybe hoping there would be a broader project at the CMC site, but getting this letter recognizes that, you know, they seem to be comfortable with the regional plant that is Morro Bay Cayugas moving forward. So just wanted to make sure the community had a chance to pull this out of the report and talk a little bit more about it. Thanks.
Uh, thank you all for that. And I would agree definitely on sharing the letter with WRFCAC and also with our entire JPA board. I personally.
Good evening. Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and members of the council. And if you'll forgive me, AGP is setting up some slides, and I think I'm going to get a clicker so I can assist with that presentation. So, yes, this is an item that is a public hearing item to consider for council to review and consider final funding recommendations for the 2015 Community Development Block Grant Program. At the December 9th, 2014 City Council meeting, the council voted to adopt draft funding recommendations approving approximately $62,000 in 2015 federal grant community development block grant funds on the city's pedestrian accessibility improvement project. Since that meeting, about 2 weeks ago, on February 26th, county staff relayed to city staff our final funding allocations from HUD. And normally these funding allocations, this final funding amount, comes much later in the year. The increase was approximately $10,000 more than what was anticipated at the December meeting. And staff's recommendation in the staff report before you has correspondingly adjusted the formula allocations to the recommended programs. Just to give you a little bit of background, as part of the 2015 funding program year, the city received 4 applications. In the past 2 years, the senior nutrition program has been funded by the city through this funding source. And then prior to that, CAPSLO was funded in 2012. Council may choose to change their funding recommendations that they made from the December meeting. And those are presented to you under alternatives 1 through 3 on page 1 of your staff report. Staff would like to point out that under the terms of the city's participation agreement with the county, any funding recommendation changes would be required to be consistent with federal guidelines. And the county participation agreement that the city has requires all awards to be a minimum of $8,000 due to the high administrative requirements required by HUD. And as part of those administrative requirements, the city conducted public participation pursuant to the program. Public workshops were held throughout the county to solicit public comment on community needs starting in the fall of 2014. After the December meeting, there were additional public workshops to make comments on the draft funding recommendations. And those were held last month throughout the county. So, as outlined in the staff report, the staff recommendation is to continue with the draft funding recommendations that the council made at the December meeting. Past direction from HUD staff, U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, has been that due to the high administrative burden associated with this federal funding program, that cities and counties choose funding awards that provide for maximum community benefit for the amount of administrative time that it takes to administer a program. And then, so staff's recommendation was based on this direction from HUD, but then also in cognizant of City Council adopted goals. And with that, the staff recommendation is shown on the screen here, which is that the City Council recommend making final funding recommendations that forward recommendations to the County Board of Supervisors for the Pedestrian Accessibility Sidewalk Program at the total 2015 funding allocation of approximately $72,000. And then additionally authorize the city manager to make pro rata adjustments to the allocation based on any final funding changes that may change due to HUD budgetary considerations. And also staff staff would like to point out that as part of the recommendation, This is based on that funding of the request by the city would allow the city to provide for the third phase continuation of the pedestrian accessibility program, and council goal number two being to improve city streets. That was just a brief presentation of the information in the staff report, so I am available to answer any further questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Jacinth. Any questions? We'll start over here with John. No. Matt?
No questions.
Christine? Okay, no questions. This is a public hearing, so go ahead and open public comments. Anyone like to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, bring it back to...
This watching at home, this might be kind of a zero, some people going, what is this all about? But this really dovetails very nicely with the goals that we've put out and how it's going to help our streets in town. So, folks, this isn't just an empty thing going on here. It's actually part of the goal. So thank you for pointing that out.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Heading, second by Makowetski. Any other comments?
Teeny bit more discussion.
Okay, yes, go for it.
I just think it bears mentioning that in our discussion about this in December, we talked about it a bit, but I just want to always give it a little more of a shout out, and that is that we have funded what are considered, and I'm going to search for the word, the public services, Ms. Jansen? Okay, we've things like... senior nutrition and CAPSLO programs, they fall under public services. That's the correct term. And then just to reiterate again that because the administration fees are so daunting for these federal grants, this really isn't the biggest bang for the buck when you're thinking about the overall community in Morro Bay due to the pressure on the administrator to make sure there's so much incredible reporting that must be done for the federal funds. So if we choose to support, you know, something like a CAPSLO program, I think the Maxine Lewis shelter or senior nutrition, then we'll just have to find a different way to do that, that it just doesn't fit right now into the CDBG funds. So I just want to recognize that it isn't that we're choosing not to, it's just become overwhelming for us to do it for a small city to have that kind of administrative cost. And maybe if there's another comment staff would like to make about that, but if not, then I'm ready to vote. Thanks.
I think you summed that up well, and I'll just add that the recent improvements from these funds to sidewalks and ADA accessibility have really very noticeable around town and definitely make a difference. So appreciate that work there. So go ahead and vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries unanimously. And Chief Christie, I believe you're up with item C, unfinished business, discussion and direction regarding increased fines for use of illegal fireworks.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I couldn't think of the rest of the title. Sorry about that. I think Nancy's going to help fire up my super elaborate PowerPoint. You'll be impressed with my ability to have a white background and black letters. So we've been talking about fireworks for about 3 years. This will be my third season here in Morro Bay. And today I'm going to bring a little report about talking about increasing fines. You received a staff report, and this is going to be kind of a quick PowerPoint presentation so others can see the rationale and what I've presented. This looks like it's pretty easy, Nancy, right? Okay, excellent. So the recommendations and alternatives. So I'm recommending, staff is recommending that we increase the fines associated with penalties for the use of fireworks, as well as adding a provision where officers can cite for the very first offense. And I'll explain the process and how that works. The first alternative would be leave it as it is, and the second would be we could prohibit the use of safe and sane on all areas within the city limits. Currently, we can do that on private property, as well as prohibit public fireworks displays. We could also consider prohibiting all use of safe and sane and perhaps still having public displays with the approval of the fire chief. So there's lots of things we could consider. I will say that I believe that we do get complaints when people are using things in a lawful way, because there are some folks in our community that don't necessarily like the use of fireworks. There are some that do, though. So our section in the The code, as I talked about a little bit, prohibits the use of any dangerous fireworks. And it's not just our code. We also have the Health and Safety Code of California that we can use. And so, you know, fines for different health and safety code violations range from about $2,000, depending on the type of dangerous fireworks that you use, all the way down to $298 for each violation. So we also have that as police officers that we can use when we get somebody using dangerous fireworks. And then, like I already talked about, our safe and sane firework ordinance allows people to use safe and sane. You know what those are. Those are the type that you buy at the booths that are usually for fundraisers, and they can do that on their private property. However, some folks use them on the street, which is, of course, public property. And then with the big, fancy public fireworks display, my partner, the fire chief, has to approve that. Our current administrative citation process means we have to warn first-time offenders, and a lot of times that would be all it would take. And then our violations are not that pricey. We have it can't exceed $100 for the first violation, subsequent violation with smoke piles. And then proactive policing. So last year we posted signs on the beaches, and we're just like this presentation, it's a way to make our public aware of some of the codes that we have in the city. And we have this fantastic social media that we're using quite a bit, and just getting our message out about not just that there's violations with the use of fireworks, but also there's some dangers. And people can hurt themselves, and fires can happen. Thankfully, in my time here, we haven't had that. But it's also a consideration with the use of fireworks. And then one of the things I'd like to do is kind of change the way we do our staffing this next year. There's going to be some changes in the 4th of July celebration, so perhaps more of the sworn officers can work the night shift while we have more of our volunteers working some of the events during the day. But absolutely there'll be officers at the bike parade. I don't know if I'll be on a bike, but absolutely they'll be there. And then I wanted to bring some information about different jurisdictions where I came from many, many years ago. The county decided to triple the fines. They have kind of a safety enforcement zone. So around the 4th of July, they triple the fines associated with fireworks and open containers and lots of other ordinances. The county and city of Santa Cruz had to do that because they had a lot of issues with lots of people and lots of violence, and people were using fireworks as weapons. But it helped quite a bit. There were some other tactics that were employed, but it was useful. And tripling the fines brought it to about $1,000 for the violation. And there's other cities also in the state that do that as well. And like I said, there has been some success in those other jurisdictions with increasing the fine structure, signage, social media, different tactics with staffing. It depends on the type of issues that you're having in your city. Our city, we have very nice, peaceful 4th of July's, but we do have some fireworks complaints. And so here's the last slide, I believe. So, fine structure. I'm looking for some council direction and happy to answer any questions. The PD will enhance our public outreach and awareness. We have our signs, and if we choose to change the penalties, we'll, of course, talk about that. And then, like I discussed, we're going to change staffing around this year a little bit so we can be a little more proactive and perhaps be in the neighborhoods as these fireworks are going off before it's a burn pile. And that concludes my presentation.
Great, excellent presentation. Any questions from council? Mr. Eddy? Okay. Matt, go for it.
thank you. That's all kinds of wonderful information there, Chief. I do have a question about safe and sane. Are we only concerned in this necessarily, and I realize you mentioned the 4th of July quite a bit, other times during the year? People will come in to, they'll go and just come back with all kinds of wonderful fireworks, and they'll have a party. So are these same, whatever the regulations, whether or not we keep them the same or increase the fines, will that also go for the rest of the year?
Yes, I am seeking direction to just increase the fines. So it'll be 365 days a year rather than seeking direction on a safety enhancement zone. So it would be applicable all year round, to include New Year's Eve.
This is a random question, but I was hoping we could just have the slide back for our discussion that shows what we're currently doing in the city. Okay, thank you very much. I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And actually, if you could, I don't think you're quite there yet, Chief Christie, with what our current code fine structure is. There we go.
There
thank you. And just in leading up to this, just recalling last year seeing signs posted around our area focused mostly on the county, but people see those coming in. I thought I had recalled seeing those at about $4,000, mostly posted around Cayucas. But Chief Christie and I had some time today to talk about that, and sounds like in the county outside of Morro Bay, it's $2,000. And
yes, we confirmed that with the San Luis bail schedule. It's $2,000 for that particular county ordinance violation.
Okay, but it did also sound like from Mr. Pannoni that we have limits within our existing code about how high we could fine. My question was, should we not try to match what's the fine level is surrounding Morro Bay to try to be consistent there? But I wanted to give Mr. Pannoni a chance to comment on that.
Thank you. The research that we did indicated that a city is limited to $1,000. Actually, the counties are limited to $1,000, but I won't go there.
Okay. Probably a good choice. Thank you for that. We'll go ahead and open public comment on this item. Anyone here to speak? No? Okay. All right. Well, we'll close public. I think what I'm hearing Chief Christie recommend is, with the staff recommendation, is go raise it to $1,000. That includes your package of increased policing and activity during that time, and also public awareness. So sounds like you're in support of that. Okay. And I also am. I think what I've noticed since being on the council, and particularly seeing the success of our Morro 4th celebration, is an increase in the use of illegal fireworks. And as the chief pointed out during her presentation, there's the concern of fire danger with those, as well as, you know, public health and physical safety, and then not to mention, which I think we hear quite a bit, and increasing just public peace for people and neighborhoods and also pets. So there's ways for people to celebrate without large explosions that potentially could create public safety issues. So really happy to see this. And I guess if no one else has any comments, Christine, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that we have been struggling with this a little bit the last 2 years because we've had significant, it may not be significant in, you know, compared to an area like Santa Cruz, but I think it's fairly significant for Morro Bay to get that kind of complaint for any one thing. To me, other than business licenses lately, it's a lot of people complaining. And I know we've heard it, not necessarily about the 4th of July fireworks themselves, although the professional ones that the committee would produce, but, you know, there really are lots of things happening in the neighborhoods, and all you kind of have to do is be home to see. And for me, I feel as though we do need to move forward with no warning, again, you know, no first warning on the illegal fireworks, and especially because we are in, you know, entering the fourth year of a drought. So the last thing we want is for something to happen that is, you know, just irresponsible fireworks use. It can happen with a cigarette, of course, but just it would just be really painful to have that happen. So I think if there's any pushback, it can be, well, you know, it's a drought concern for me as well. But I do think that, you know, people can do the safe and sane if they choose to, and, you know, we should be really clear about that in some way, that if they do them on their personal property, that's not going to get them a fine. We're pretty clear on that, right? I didn't hear anybody say we're going after safe and sane.
What I'm hearing is that we are continuing to allow safe and sane on private property. I believe it'd be up to the officer if they contact someone using safe and sane on public property, whether or not they would issue a citation. Is that correct, Chief Christie?
Yes, that's correct. On public property.
Yes, on public property.
Right, so people can do safe and it sounds to me like our consensus is go after illegal, no warning for first time, go after illegal fireworks, and then increase fines, but allow people to do safe and sane on their private property. That's where I'm headed. Okay, great. Then it sounds like
Matt, do you have any other
comments? If I could add to that, that's okay, doable. I can see that. But Chief, I'd like to see, in terms of the proactive police stance on this, how would we do the PR angle in getting this out to people? Because it's, I mean, somebody coming into town whatever second homeowner or even people not paying attention to this. There would be a pretty rude awakening. So how are you thinking of doing that?
Well, you know, we have these meetings, and as we get closer to the 4th, we just, you know, make a plug in announcements. We have Facebook. You know, the media kind of picks and chooses what they want to the print, but we can do a media release. And then we have our signs coming in and out of the city, so we can put some information there, and I'm doing it too now. And so those are just some of the areas, and perhaps we can consider, you know, posting things in some of our businesses if they'll put them up there. You know, it's public education, and you know, there's lots of rules, and sometimes it surprises me or people. But the bottom line is, there's really not a lot of places where the use of fireworks is lawful. There are places that do allow safe and sane on public property as well, and absolutely dangerous fireworks are unlawful all the time. And we do have a system to address that now, but some penalties, our own penalty might be higher.
And I'll add just briefly, if you look at our current citation structure with a warning and then the first violation not to exceed 100, second 200, if I've spent over $1,000+ on illegal fireworks, I'd almost look at that and say, well, Morro Bay is the place to go and light these off, because anywhere else in the county you're going to be paying top dollar, and here we're really light. So I think our adjustment here is appropriate and needed. So I will make a motion actually to...
Mayor Pro Tem, may I ask a question?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Focusing on the timing. You want to permit safe and sane fireworks 365 days a year, or did you want to limit that to some time near the July 4th?
Good point. As we currently have it, it's allowed during July 4th.
It's allowed 365. There is no time limit.
Well, we actually haven't really talked about that nuance in the past. Thanks for bringing that up. Now's the time to definitely talk about it.
And yes, I observed fireworks, and no, I didn't get there in time. So we do get calls randomly, and I get comments occasionally about fireworks. Primarily, it's though the 4th of July that's the big one, and that's, you know, the big stats we get. I think this New Year's Eve, we might have had 2 or 3 calls, and I saw them pretty much over in the Monterey, maybe Pacific area when I saw them going off.
Okay, not my house. So I guess because we haven't seen a lot of complaints, I am willing to go with 365 and safe and sane and just see how it goes. But I think we might want to revisit it if we find that it's becoming reaching close to the numbers we're seeing in July. I would also say some people will tell us that they're not safe or sane, so we're not going to be solving this issue for everyone who's complained and brought it forward. I even know to me people have said there is a certain sentiment for banning all safe and sane. So I just want to recognize that. I'm not ready to go there right now as a council member, but I think that I've seen some of the safe and sane. You know, there's certainly nothing like, you know, the illegals, but I understand there's still concern about them as well. I think we're just going to have to see how it goes, is how I look at it.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing to consider is the public versus the private property issue. When you think about it, the majority of what I see is on public property. You're out in the middle of the street setting off for the neighborhood those fireworks. And then I think, well, if you're backing back up into your residence area, you're more likely to have problems with fire and or safety events. So now my level of concern has just gone up, thinking about this in some detail from a year-round standpoint. I'm not so sure I would support that being appropriate on a year-round basis, other than possibly the July 4th holiday weekend. Honestly, you know, I'm just thinking about my grandkids and what we do, and I'm really thinking about what we're going to do because, you know, we do avoid the public street. However, neighbors are often not avoiding that, and I see it on birthdays too. And confession, you know, my grandson's last birthday, you know, he wanted to have that. So I guess my sense is that I would be concerned if we are increasing the frequency with which it is occurring especially given the fact that it's going to be now on private property in closer proximity to one's own house that is more likely to burn. I would not be in favor of that.
And it's always been on private property. This, okay.
Right. Yeah, I just happened to think that out. Yeah.
Okay.
If I could make a suggestion on that, because I think you have good points, I guess my concern would be if we were to make a change tonight for the use of safe and sane fireworks on private property, that'd be a really significant change and one that I'm not sure the community as a whole has had a discussion on. So my thought would be let's move forward with the staff recommendation as it's stated tonight and revisit this about this point next year, knowing that there'll be without firework public fireworks display on the 4th this year by the city or the community. It's going to be interesting to see what that does. Is it going to inspire more people to fire off illegal fireworks and be focused on that, or increase the use of safe and sane? And you know, it could develop into a bigger issue. So my thought would be let's revisit this next year about this time, but I can tell Mr. Pannoni has something to add.
Just because of the timing when you said things were going to be done, it's going to come back to as a first reading of an ordinance and a second reading of an ordinance. Then it will be effective
point.
30 days after that.
Okay. Would it be appropriate then for us to kind of look at that component, the safe and sane, 365 days a year, and talk about that when we get the first reading?
You certainly can do that if you want.
Yeah.
Do you want the ordinance written to allow it 365 days, to have an alternative 365 days or around the 4th of July, and you pick which one, so we don't have to go for two first readings?
That sounds excellent.
Okay.
Include those options. Any concerns, Chief Christie, on that?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
The idea would be to have the first reading would include an option that has continuation of 365-day use of safe and sane fireworks on private property, or very strict use of safe and sane only during the 4th of July on private property, and the rest of the year safe and sane would also not be allowed. And I believe that would start to get to the option that Mr. Heading was suggesting.
Yes, it's just the irony in my mind of saying it's a public safety hazard, however we're going to allow it to occur because there's somewhat lesser volume at other times of the year that is the bothering.
Down around the Embarcadero and dealing with traffic issues and other type of issues, so you know, not having sort of that evening thing, you know, we'll be out and about.
Okay, thanks. Fair warning, everybody. Go to Cayucas.
You know, that kind of brings up another question, if I could. I'm not aware of what the safe and sane regulations are in the county, if those are allowed. I believe they are 365 days a year. That'd be something that'd be interesting to know when this comes back, unless you do have some information on that tonight.
You know, I read their code, and it was a little ambiguous. It was very clear on dangerous fireworks, and it got down to some exceptions about state-approved, and I wasn't sure exactly what that meant. So without actually asking somebody, I'm not sure, you know, what that code reads. I sent it to our city attorney. I don't know if he had a chance to look at it. It was just sort of the second sentence. But absolutely dangerous fireworks, they go after with vigor.
So are they drawing distinction within the safe and sane designation?
You mean between dangerous fireworks and safe and sane?
Or within safe and sane, say, are you aware of a situation where they actually start to break down the safe and sane designation to say sparklers are okay, but iron crosses are not allowed? Or I'm just making that up.
Safe and sane are safe and sane. They have the state marshal approved stamp on them, and you buy them at the booths that are typically raising money. We don't do that here in Morro Bay. And I really think, you know, that for the first reading, it'll be nice to have a fire component here so they can talk to you about the dangers of fire. They really enjoy that. And so I think that'll be good. But safe and sane is safe and sane, and everything else, commercial grade fireworks are dangerous fireworks, and they're always illegal unless approved by the fire chief in a sanctioned show.
Great. So the safe and sane actually has a certified designation that's reviewed by the state.
Yes, and I don't know of any community that limits. It's either safe and sane or not. It's not these type of safe and sane.
So that would be really complicated if we wanted to go there, and I don't hear anyone saying we do. I don't think that's something that we want to do. So the debate when it comes back to us would be safe and sane allowed as it currently is 365 days a year on private property, or more restrictions on safe and sane use. But we're all in consensus about the use of illegal fireworks increasing the fine level there year-round without a warning.
Yes, and I might just mention I hear also complaints about animals being spooked, more or less.
Excuse me, I need a clarification.
Yes.
So the fine increase would be for all unlawful use of fireworks. That includes safe and sane.
That's the way I'm reading it.
Okay,
yes.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, confirm that.
Unlawful meaning not on your private property.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll make a motion then to adopt staff recommendation increasing the fines for violation of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, section 14.08.090, regarding use of dangerous fireworks, and direct staff to bring back first reading that includes one alternative allowing safe and sane as currently designated 365 days a year on private property, and another that is more restrictive on safe and sane, the use of safe and sane fireworks.
I will second that.
Okay. Motion by Noah, second by John. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
No, opposed? None? All right. Motion passes 4-0. And Chief Christie, you're still on the presentation list, so let's jump right into the next one.
Okay, then now I got to figure out how to get there. Here she comes. Yay. Just let her get fired up. No pun intended. Now I'm going to give a disclaimer. There's going to be some words in your staff report and my PowerPoint presentation I'm just not going to say. I don't know how to sound them out.
I'll say them for
you. It's not going to happen. Oh, thank you. I was hoping you would. So I tried to keep it simple in the staff or in the PowerPoint presentation. So good evening again. And so this discussion is going to be a little bit about a consideration of presenting an ordinance to council to ban the possession or sale of synthetic spices or bath salts. And you all received a sample ordinance for your review. I'm not really covering that in the presentation. And we received that from the city of Lompoc, and our city attorney is very very well suited to assist me with drafting this ordinance. Oh, Lompoc. I always get corrected on that. Lompoc. So first, the recommendation is sort of what the effects apparently caused the user. And in this presentation and the ordinance, it has nothing to do with the type of bath salts that we put in the bath when we soak after a long night with council. Severe bath salts, there's reports of severe intoxication, there's dangerous health effects. I'm sure we can ask council member Heading to chime in a little bit on this. There's a growing trend that the youth, it's easy for the youth to get bath salts and spice, and it's also becoming a pretty extreme public health and public safety issue. If you Google either one of these names, you can see lots of different articles and things that have happened around the country, the state, and even here in our county. Bath salts are typically in a white kind of powder, and they're typically labeled with not for human consumption. There's kind of the key. I got some stuff off of one of these websites, and it was fantastic, and it's a very good way to learn a little bit about this emerging trend. So here's some pictures. I thought pictures were good. Looks a little bit like cocaine, the way people are using it. And there's that really long word up there, council member Heading, that's in your staff report, and I didn't put it in the presentation. It's methy and a lot of other letters. Here's some more pictures. If you happen to see this around town, this is what we're talking about. So then spice, you've probably heard the word spice before, synthetic marijuana. It's got some herbs. You put some drugs in it, and it causes people to feel the effect of, like, smoking marijuana, but maybe even worse. There's stories of people really acting out and getting almost like they're on PCP, and they're difficult to restrain either one of these synthetic drugs. And there's some pictures of what spice might look like, a little bit like marijuana. And then it's sold legally, unfortunately. Sales and use. Retailers are selling these products, and you can also, they're readily available on the internet. If you just do a little Google search, you'll see where you can buy those things. And like I said, users of spice typically experience a high similar to marijuana and bath salts similar to cocaine. Some recent events that received some media coverage was a recent traffic accident just north of our city up in Cayucas. The driver was allegedly under the influence of spice, and there were some fatalities and some major injuries. And there was just an article this weekend. Thank you, Councilmember Smuckler, for pointing that out. And then in Morro Bay, what actually happened was we responded to assist the county in Los Osos for a male subject who was screaming and basically out of control. The dispatchers that could hear it in the background said you could hear this person was absolutely out of their mind, and it took a lots of use of less than lethal force to subdue this person when they were finally arrested. And this person was allegedly had a history of using spice. So why am I coming to you? So we have some limitations in the Health and Safety Code. We're talking about it again. The Health and Safety Code gives us the ability to make lots of arrests based on different kinds of drugs and synthetic compounds. However, manufacturers have figured out how to develop these compounds using different chemicals. So therefore, they don't qualify under our current state law. Staff recommendation, I'm suggesting we create an ordinance similar to the one they have currently in Atascadero, Paso Robles, and Lompoc to allow us to confiscate and ticket for the use or possession of bath salts and spice. In closing, I believe that this ordinance will allow us to do our mission, which is provide the highest level police services in partnership with our community. And what I'm talking about right here is public safety, and having the access to this type of mind-altering drug isn't safe, and it's actually quite more severe than the firework discussion that we just had. And I will open it up to any questions if you have any.
Great, another great presentation, and you made up for not having many pictures in the last one, so thanks for that. Any questions from council? John, do you want to lead us off?
Comments.
Let's start with questions, and we'll open public comment and come back for discussion.
Maybe one question, and then I can comment on it. By the way, thank you so much for bringing this forward. It's a huge issue. The Lompoc ordinance. I was just wondering if, in review of that, there was a way that you could qualitatively analyze to prove that indeed it was one of these illegal drugs. I looked through there, admittedly, fairly quickly, but do you recall that? In other words, it looks like.
So, it was public comment. Bring it back to council for discussion. Matt, if you want to lead us off.
Sure. I work in Lompoc, and I work in an alternative school, and I have a lot of kids who have been using a little bit of bath salts and a lot of spice. And so watching what this has done in the face of the other drugs that they've been using historically, it's really nuts how this works, and I would really like to keep it out of Morro Bay. The destructiveness, I mean, it's, I mean, we can think historically of all the various nefarious drugs that adolescents use and adults. But I'm just speaking from the adolescent standpoint. If we can do this and be proactive about it, I think it would be great.
Yeah, I agree, especially if the price point is low for something like this. If it's something that can be bought, you know, rather cheaply, then that makes it, for me, a lot more hazardous as well. And that if, you know, younger folks can access it, then it's certainly something. So I'm in favor, and I would actually move approval unless you guys wanted to keep on talking.
We love talking. John, we have to give the pharmacist a chance.
Yeah, right. You want to press the color thing? And no, 3 minutes. I did want to thank Chief Christie for bringing this forward. I really do appreciate that. It is not an epidemic. It's pandemic throughout this country right now. It is a huge issue. Whether it's sold here or not, there are people here, I am sure, that are under the influence of this. If they aren't, we would be very, very unusual. These types of agents are worse than a lot of the controlled substances that are actually approved for use, in that dose quantities are not known, contents are not known, and the interactions are much worse with these than with some of the regular approved drugs. So I won't go into any detail. They're bad, 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 bad drugs. And what they're trying to do is stay one step ahead of the DEA by changing a little chemical entity on it so that it isn't listed in the Class 1 narcotic schedule and therefore, quote unquote, isn't illegal. So I would highly suggest we move forward with developing the policy.
Yeah, I'd agree completely. And we are in some ways preempting the federal government on this, but it seems warranted in this particular case to criminalize this and move as quickly as possible to make sure it doesn't proliferate. So who did I hear had a motion? It was Christine, was it? You want to go for it?
Was it? Yes, it was me. Okay, so I would, unless there's more to say at this point, because we can always say it during discussion, it's always an option. So then I would move approval that the city council, that Chief Christie returned to council with an ordinance to ban the possession and sale of synthetic spices and or synthetic bath salts within Morro Bay.
Second.
Okay, motion by Christine Johnson, second by Councilmember Heading. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 4-0. It looks like Chief Christie has 5-0.
It was a great vote. I just wanted to say this this ordinance, as well as the last discussion item that we had, supports the goals as well, our most current goals. So thank you very much for providing me this opportunity tonight.
Yeah, thanks for jumping into this one. Okay, we'll move on then to declaration of future agenda items. None? Matt? John? I don't have any either. Say, maybe not historic, but it's a good sign. And so with that, I will adjourn the meeting. Great job, everyone.
Appreciate your leadership.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, no. Oh, okay, yes. Meeting adjourned.